The sound of chanting caught his attention. Doc knew that there had once been Indian reservations in New Mex, but he didn't think that this was Apache land. Then again, the Indian nations had been at war with one another long before the Europeans arrived, so it was eminently possible that the Indians who survived Skydark built new nations amid the technology debris of their former conquerors. Deciding that discretion was the better part of valor, Doc started back toward the Perdition Valley when there came a motion in the air and something stabbed down into the ground directly in front of the scholar. He recoiled at the sight of a wooden spear sticking out of the dirt, a tuft of eagle feathers on the long shaft fluttering in the breeze. Spinning fast, Doc drew both of his hand blasters and waited for the next move. The Indians of old valued courage and honor above everything else, as did some of the Deathlands barbarians. A warrior was often welcomed with open arms, while a frightened outlander would be slain on the spot. The slightest sign of weakness now could mean his immediate death. The spear hadn't missed him. It had gone exactly where the caster had wanted it to land. This was a calling card to announce the arrival of the owners. However, the big question was whether this new generation of Indians would have the same social ethics as their long-gone ancestors. A dozen people on horseback rode into view. They were big men and women, all of them dressed in loose leather vests and pants laced together with rawhide cord. Everybody had a headband supporting an assortment of feathers in the rear, although the number and color of the feathers was different for each, and all of the riders had delicate scars on their faces in elaborate designs. A couple of the Indians carried a quiver of arrows and a bow on their backs. The rest held bolt-action long blasters with bandoliers of brass across their chests, and every horse had a scabbard attached at the saddle, carrying a wooden spear. Only one man had a hand blaster and a beaded holster at his side, the grip turned backward for a crosshand draw. His scabbard was empty. Not knowing what else to do, Doc holstered the lama, and then touched his heart, lips, and forehead in greeting. It was a very non-threatening gesture, and hopefully would be interpreted as a sign of friendship. Try as he might, the old man couldn't think of any other non-verbal greeting, aside from wiggling his fingers hello, which would just look ridiculous. The rider seemed puzzled at the gesture, but not offended. An older warrior with gray in his hair turned to a young woman.
Catch us on this day.
Huh?
That didn't sound good, so Doc walked backward to the spear and yanked it from the ground. The Indians became instantly alert. They openly placed hands on their weapons as the old man approached them again, then halted. After a few moments, the leader of the Indians walked his horse close and stopped a few feet away. Silently, Doc flipped the spear over and offered it to the rider, shaft first. The elder accepted the weapon and held it for a few seconds with a wicked barbed head pointed at Doc's heart. The old man stood still, not moving a muscle. Then the rider flipped the spear over and tucked it into the scabbard. Trying not to show relief, Doc had the strong feeling he had just passed a very important test. No longer scowling, the leader of the Indians asked something in a language unknown to Doc.
What he come say?
Doc shook his head in reply.
Ayutinya.
It seemed vaguely familiar to Doc, but still he had to shrug to show his inability to comprehend.
English?
The Indian leader frowned. Shaking his head in annoyance, the chief rider pointed a finger at Doc, then over his shoulder. Doc nodded in agreement, and the dozen riders reined around their mounts to start walking back from where they came. Holstering the Ruger, Doc followed alongside, knowing that to fall behind them would be taken as a sign of submission. The mixed group moved in silence, pausing for a moment as a howler moved on the horizon, the mutie thrashing the air with its tentacles. As it disappeared, the Indians continued up a sloping rill and around a large sand dune. Straight ahead there were twinkling lights, dancing pinpoints that grew into the campfires of a small settlement as they trudged closer. A tall barricade of thorn bushes tied together made a formidable barrier around the encampment, the only opening guarded by Indian women carrying scatter guns, with large, mastiff-like dogs standing obediently by their sides. Walking through the gate of the ville, Doc studied the area carefully in case he had to leave at a run. There was a knotted rope corral full of horses off to the side, and numerous tents dotted the camp. The fabric was brightly decorated with highly stylized figures of people, horses, bears, eagles, and other animals, none of them muties. Four tents were clustered around each campfire, the burning wood lying in a pit that was several feet deep. Doc knew that trick. The pit helped hide the light of the fire and made food cook faster. The companions had used the same thing themselves several times. A crowd of people wrapped in crude blankets watched with marked interest as the horseback riders led Doc directly to a large geodesic dome in the center of the settlement. Just for a moment, Doc thought it was a colossal beaver mound, as crazy as that sounded. Then he could see the dome was a wigwam, a wooden Indian lodge. He knew the process well. Young sapling trees were buried deep into the soil, their tops bent over and lashed together firmly. Then small branches were laced through the supports, and everything was covered with reinforced mud. Actually, it was a form of adobe concrete that Doc knew from experience was extremely strong. The wigwam could stop most blaster fire and even hold back the acid rains. At an incomprehensible command from the chief rider, the other Indians reined in their mounts and slid off the horses on the wrong side. Doc gave no reaction to that, but he knew Ryan and JB often did the same thing. It was a combat move to use the horse as protection in a battle. The sight wasn't encouraging. The chief rider talked to his sekmen for a few minutes, and they spread out on different errands. Walking over to the wigwam, the rider waved at Doc, then knelt to crawl inside the dome. Knowing that to refuse would be seen as extremely impolite, and quite possibly fatal, Doc dropped his saddlebags at the entrance and started inside. Soft leather mats decorated with unknown symbols covered the ground, and Doc could see flickering lights at the end of the long tunnel. Reaching the interior, Doc slowly stood. Tin oil lamps hung from the wooden struts, the yellowish light brightly illuminating the domed enclosure. The floor was an elaborate sand painting of a spiral that centered on a small fire pit filled with glowing red coals, the smoke rising upward to exit the dome through an elaborate vent. Primitive did not mean stupid, Doc reminded himself. This civilization was much older than his own. Sitting around the smoky fire pit was a collection of somber elders dressed in loose buckskins, covered with more of the cryptic symbols. They formed a solid line around the fire pit, except for a location where there was a gap, as if a person was missing. Walking with extreme care to not disturb the sand painting, the chief rider approached an old woman sitting on the far side of the circle. Her skin was as wrinkled and dark as a dried riverbed after a hard rain, but her eyes sparkled, and her long ebony hair shone with the vigor of youth. A single eagle feather stuck out of her long tresses. The tip dyed an electric blue. Doc didn't need to be told that this was the leader of the tribe, or at least their shaman. Touching his heart, the chief rider spoke to the woman for a few minutes. She nodded in reply, then dismissed him with a curt wave. Walking past Doc as if the old man were invisible, the chief rider entered the tunnel and crawled away. Left alone with the tribal elders, Doc approached the empty spot in the ring, paused to wait for a rebuke, and when none was forthcoming, he carefully sat. The heat from the coals felt good after the chill night wind, and Doc luxuriated in it, feeling his tense muscles slowly relax.
Greetings, venerable elders. I come in peace.
Yet violence stalks your path, Time Walker.
The old shaman tossed a handful of dried leaves onto the coals. Thick fumes rose to fill the dome.
But the whole world is filled with violence now, so we bid you welcome. Long have we waited for your arrival.
But Doc nearly didn't hear the second statement. His mind was still whirling from the first. What did she say? Time Walker? The dome seemed to start spinning, and Doc began to feel madness swell within him. But with a concerted effort, he forced himself to stay focused. Trying to choose his next words carefully, Doc just sat for a while, breathing in the pungent fumes. Then, his thoughts became crystal clear, and for the first time in recent memory, there were no ghostly images filling the back of his mind. The kaleidoscope of scenes and information vanished like graffiti washed off a blackboard. The old woman tossed in another handful of leaves, and the smoky fumes intensified. The air was becoming thick, but to Doc it seemed as if his eyes had never been sharper. He saw everything in greater detail. Everything was in such bright colors, and the sounds of the settlement were as rich as a philharmonic orchestra.
What do you know of me?
Only a little. When we walk in the dream time, we can see your life stretching from the past into the future and back again, weaving throughout the history of this land like a single red thread in a huge tapestry of colors. You do not belong here. Nature has been violated by your passage. The balance is disturbed. All things tremble.
Doc firmly clenched a fist.
They took me. This is not of my doing. I only want to go back home.
To your family?
Yes.
The fumes from the coals rose darker, thicker, sweeter, until the air in the lodge was murky with the swirling fog. Doc blinked hard. No, the air was clear. His mind was filled with a mist. Was he being drugged? Or was he finally going insane?
Would you leave your friend? The one-eyed man?
Yes!
A doorway will be opened. But it will only be open for a moment. A heartbeat. A double moment of time. Do not hesitate, Time Walker. Do not pause, or you will be lost forever. When you see the gateway, jump.
Jump? Was that a clue? Why did she use that word? Doc felt dizzy, and it seemed that his sanity was cracking. Was any of this actually happening? Or had he hit his head on a rock when the horse fell off the cliff, and he was lying unconscious on the desert ground? The shaman touched the symbols on her clothing.
We are not Doomies, but we walk the spirit path and can see without mortal eyes.
Reaching into the bowl, she tossed a handful of beads into the fire. Instantly, the flame rose from the coals, and a blue-tinted smoke rose to swirl about the domed lodge. She added a handful of sticks tied into the shape of a tall man, a tuft of silvery threads at the top for hair.
Your mind is broken, but this we will fix.
Doc watched his tiny effigy turn dark and burn.
Why would you help me?
You are a blessed one. You have been tested and found worthy. You are the Time Walker, one of many.
This was impossible. There were other survivors of Operation Kronos? With that thought, lost doors opened in Doc's mind. And suddenly, he saw the cells again as he was dragged into the laboratory for testing. Needles came from every direction, piercing him countless times to check his blood, his heart, his brain. They probed him inside and out, then seemingly sent him through time again, the racking pain reaching unimaginable levels. Then, clarity filled his mind with the grim memory of a smug white-coat scientist who had foolishly turned his back on the test subject. Moving fast, Doc had grabbed an instrument from a nearby tray and slashed the man across the spine. The bloody scientist fell, and Doc cut through his bindings just as security guards poured into the room, burly men carrying crystal rods that sparked with electricity at the tips. Stun guns, cattle prods, different names for the same thing, givers of pain. Remembering his college fencing lessons, Doc had killed two of the guards with a stolen scalpel before making his escape from the room. Stark naked, the Vermont schoolteacher pelted down a shiny white corridor that he could now recognize as the inside of a redoubt. The Matrans. Were they the key? Could they send people through time as well as across space? Then all he needed was the formula, the right code sequence to tap into the keypad, and he would go back. Back home to Emily. Suddenly, doors slammed open in the redoubt, and more guards appeared, leveling stubby rifles. Twin beams of light stabbed out from the muzzle of the weapons, and when they touched him, there was an electric crackle that made Doc's arm go numb. He dropped the scalpel, then charged the guards. Stepping out from behind a recessed doorway, a pale man in white fired a gun at the advancing guards. A silenced weapon. The guards fell, red blood on their chests, the rifles falling to the hard floor. Doc grabbed one and turned to face his rescuer. The man was gone, just a fleeting shadow, always in the background, always hidden. Somebody who helped Doc during one of his many failed escapes from the whitecoats of Operation Kronos. Additional memories poured into his beleaguered mind like burning waters. No, the stranger wasn't a friend. Doc had escaped, and the stranger sent him back. Only it wasn't one of the guards or technicians from Kronos. It was somebody else. No, something else. A man? A machine? Marked with a blue ring with a red star on his forehead. The symbol unseen, but always there. A man who was cold as dead fire. Cold fire.
He remembers. Time is healing. Spirits, protect us. He's here. Delphi, the Dark Walker.
The side of the wigwam exploded as a flaming object punched through the adobe shell to streak across the ring of cringing elders and blow out the other side, closely followed by a violent detonation.